Good morning and welcome to Claude Daily, your morning briefing on everything Claude and Anthropic. I'm Alex.
And I'm Sam. Happy Wednesday, everyone. April 22nd, 2026.
Big documentation day today, Sam. I know that sounds dry when I say it out loud like that.
Big documentation day. Yeah, that's not exactly a headline that makes you spit out your coffee.
Right. But hear me out. Because what's actually in these docs touches on some things that enterprise developers have been asking about for a while. We're talking autonomous agent workflows, data privacy guarantees, how Claude Code handles your session history. This stuff matters.
And it matters because Claude Code has moved well past being just a smart autocomplete. We're talking about it running full autonomous loops, spawning sub-processes, managing long-running tasks. The infrastructure questions around all of that, how do you debug it, who owns your data, how do you chain agents together, those are real production concerns.
Exactly. So we're going to dig into all of it. We've also got a sweep of what's happening across the broader AI news landscape this morning, which, spoiler, continues to be absolutely relentless.
It never slows down. I feel like every week we say that, and every week it's true.
It's the nature of this moment. All right, let's get into it. So the biggest thread running through today's Claude documentation updates is really about Claude Code maturing as a platform. And I want to start with something that I think a lot of developers will immediately recognize as a pain point, configuration debugging.
Oh yes, this is so real. Anyone who's tried to get Claude Code to behave in a specific way, follow certain coding conventions, use particular tools, adopt a specific persona for a project, and then had it just not do that, knows exactly what I'm talking about.
Right. And the docs are now very explicit about why that happens. The overwhelming majority of configuration failures, according to Anthropic's Claude Code documentation, come down to one of three things: files not loading at all, files loading from an unexpected location, or files being overridden by something else in the config stack.
Which sounds simple, but when you're three layers deep into a project with global settings, workspace settings, and project level settings all potentially in play, it gets messy fast.
It really does. And so what Anthropic has done is codify a diagnostic workflow. They've got a set of slash commands, and these are commands you run right inside Claude Code that expose exactly what's going on under the hood. We're talking about slash context, slash memory, slash skills, slash MCP, and slash doctor.
I love that they included slash doctor. That's such a useful concept. Just tell me what's wrong. Run diagnostics. Don't make me read through config files manually.
Slash doctor is basically the catch-all health check, yeah. It surfaces environment issues, path problems, things that would otherwise take you ages to track down. But the others are more targeted. Slash memory, for example, specifically shows you what instructions are actually loaded into Claude's working context at that moment. So if you've written a bunch of project-level guidance and you're not sure if it's being respected, you can just check.
And that's the key insight here, right? It's not enough to have written the configuration. You need to be able to verify that it was actually ingested, and that it's sitting where Claude can see it when it's doing its work.
Exactly. And slash MCP, that's the Model Context Protocol diagnostic, shows you which external tools and services are actually connected. Because a lot of people set up integrations with things like GitHub, or databases, or custom APIs through Model Context Protocol, and if those connections aren't live, Claude just silently doesn't have access to them.
Which is worse than an error in some ways. An error tells you something went wrong. Silent failure just means Claude goes on without the tool, and you might not even notice until you're wondering why it's not doing the thing you thought you configured it to do.
Exactly. And I think the slash skills command is underappreciated here too. It shows you what capabilities and behaviors have been defined, which becomes really important when you're working in a team environment where multiple people might be contributing to the configuration.
Right, because configuration drift in a team context is a real thing. One person adds something, another person has a conflicting setting, and suddenly nobody knows why Claude is behaving the way it is on certain machines, but not others.
And the docs are emphatic that you should treat configuration debugging like you'd treat any other debugging task. Systematically, with tools, rather than just staring at files and hoping you spot the problem.
That's good engineering practice being baked into the documentation itself. Rather than just documenting what the config options are, they're documenting how to think about diagnosing problems with them.
Which shows how seriously they're taking Cloud Code as a production-grade development environment. This isn't a toy. People are running real workflows through this thing.
And when real workflows break, you need real debugging tools. Makes sense. What's next?
So this connects directly to the question of trust, actually. Because if you're running a real workflow through Cloud Code, especially in an enterprise context, the next question is, what happens to my data?
Yeah, and this is a question that I think has been somewhat murky for people. There's a big difference between using Claude as a consumer on a free plan and using Claude Code in a team or enterprise environment. And those differences have real implications.
The docs lay this out really clearly now. Anthropic has established what they're calling a two-tier framework for data usage in Claude Code, and the dividing line is pretty sharp. On one side, you have consumer users. That's free, pro, and max plan subscribers. On the other side, you have commercial users, teams, enterprise, and direct API access.
And the policies are very different.
Very different. For consumer users, and this is the opt-in piece that I think is important, they can choose to allow their data to be used for model training. If they opt in, there's up to a 5-year retention period on that data. And the framing from Anthropic is that this is a collaborative thing. You're helping improve the model, and in exchange, you get access to the frontier of what Claude can do.
Which is a fair trade for a lot of people. If I'm using Claude on a personal project, I'm probably fine with that. I might even want to feel like I'm contributing something to the development of the technology.
Right. But flip to the commercial side, and the defaults are completely different. Teams and enterprise users are on a 30-day retention period by default, and they do not opt into model training. Their data is not used to improve the model.
And that's not just a nice to have. For a lot of enterprise customers, that's a regulatory requirement. Depending on the industry, healthcare, finance, legal, defense contracting, the idea of your code or your documents being retained and used for training is a non-starter.
And Anthropic goes even further than that for enterprise customers specifically with what they're calling zero data retention, which is essentially your data doesn't persist at all. It's processed and gone.
That's a significant guarantee to be able to make because it's not just about trust, although trust matters. It's about being able to point to a documented policy when a compliance team or a legal team or an auditor asks about it.
Exactly. And this is part of how Anthropic is differentiating the enterprise offering from the consumer offering in a meaningful way. It's not just about seat licenses or admin dashboards. It's about fundamentally different data handling that changes the risk calculus for organizations.
It also puts pressures on the rest of the AI industry when a major provider explicitly says, enterprise data does not train our models by default. That becomes the expectation across the board. Other providers who've been vague about this are going to have to be more explicit.
That's a great point. And I think this documentation update is as much a market signal as it is an operational one. They're saying, we know what enterprise customers need, we've built for it, and here's the proof.
The 30-day default on retention is also interesting because it's not zero, it's 30 days. Which suggests there's still some operational reason to hold it for a period. Debugging, dispute resolution, whatever. But it's bounded, and it's clearly documented.
Right. It's not indefinite. And the explicit opt-in structure for the consumer side means that the default is privacy-preserving even for regular users. They have to affirmatively choose to contribute their data.
I appreciate when the default is the more protective choice. Too often with these things, the privacy-respecting option requires you to go find it in a settings menu.
All right, so we've talked about configuration. We've talked about data. Now let's talk about the part that I think is genuinely exciting from an engineering standpoint, subagents.
Oh, okay. Now we're getting into the stuff that makes me want to open a terminal.
So the Claude Agent SDK, which is the programmatic layer through which developers build applications on top of Claude, has gotten a significant expansion around what they're calling subagents. And the concept here is that a primary agent, the main agent you've spun up for a task, can itself spawn additional specialized agent instances to handle discrete parts of a complex workflow.
So instead of one agent trying to do everything, you have a coordinator agent and a team of specialists.
Exactly. And there are three ways to define these subagents, according to the docs. First, programmatically, you pass an agent's parameter in your code and define the subagent right there. Second, as markdown files, you write a markdown file that describes the subagent's role, its tools, its constraints, and Claude Code picks it up. And third, there's automatic discovery. The system can identify when a subagent-like pattern is needed and set one up.
The markdown file approach is really interesting to me because it lowers the bar for defining agent behavior. You don't have to be writing Python or TypeScript to set up a specialized agent. You can write it in a document, essentially.
Which means it's more accessible. A senior developer can define the architecture, but someone who understands the domain, even if they're not a programmer, could potentially write a markdown description of what an agent should do.
That's a significant shift in who gets to participate in building these workflows. Okay, so what makes subagents special besides just being separate agents?
Three things, and they're all important. First, isolated context. Each subagent has its own context window. It doesn't automatically inherit everything the main agent knows. You give it what it needs for its specific task.
Which is actually a feature, not a limitation, because if you're working with a large code base, you don't want every subagent dragging in the entire context of the project. You want each one focused.
Exactly. Second, parallel execution. Multiple subagents can run simultaneously. So if you've got a task that can be decomposed into independent subtasks, you're not waiting for them to finish sequentially.
That's a huge performance thing. Think about something like running a suite of code reviews across different modules or generating documentation for multiple components at the same time. If those can happen in parallel, you're cutting your wall clock time dramatically.
And third, tool restrictions. Each subagent can have a specific, limited set of tools it's allowed to use. So, your research subagent might have web search, but not file system access. Your code execution subagent might have terminal access, but not network access.
That's a security architecture. You're applying the principle of least privilege to your AI agents.
Which is essential when you're building systems that actually do things in the real world. You don't want a research agent to accidentally or maliciously through prompt injection, start writing files or making API calls it shouldn't be making.
Prompt injection, such an underappreciated risk in agentic systems. People think about it as a language model problem, but it's really a system security problem. If an agent can be hijacked by malicious content, it reads, and then that agent has broad permissions. That's a real attack surface.
And scoping tool access to only what's needed for the specific task is a direct mitigation for that. The docs don't just describe this as a productivity feature. They're framing it as part of responsible deployment of autonomous agents.
I want to ask about the isolated context piece a bit more because context windows have been this perennial bottleneck in how useful AI systems can be. Are they saying this is a way to effectively extend what you can do beyond a single context window?
Yes, essentially. And they're pretty explicit about this. The documentation notes that as your context window fills up, as you accumulate more tool calls, more results, more back and forth, performance can degrade. The model starts losing track of things that happened earlier, or it gets confused about the current state.
The lost in the middle problem. We've seen research on this. Models have a harder time retrieving information from the middle of a very long context than from the beginning or end.
Right. And the subagent architecture is partly an answer to that. Instead of one massive, ever-growing context, you have bounded context for specific tasks. Each subagent starts fresh for its piece of the work.
Which actually mirrors how human teams work. You don't brief everyone on everything. You brief the right person on what they need to know to do their job.
And the main agent, the coordinator, maintains the high-level view while the sub-agents handle depth in their specific domains.
This is genuinely a different way of thinking about how to architect AI-assisted workflows. Not one giant prompt. A structured system of interacting agents with clear responsibilities.
It's software architecture applied to AI, which makes sense, because Claude Code is fundamentally a software development tool, and the people building with it are software architects.
So when does a developer decide to use sub-agents versus just doing everything in one agent with a big context?
The docs suggest a few signals. If your task has clearly separable components that don't depend on each other, that's a candidate for parallel sub-agents. If you have tasks that require very different tools and it's a security concern to give one agent everything, that's another signal. And if you're hitting context length issues, if your agent is getting confused because it's been running a long time, decomposing into sub-agents with fresh context can restore clarity.
And presumably there's an orchestration cost. Spawning a sub-agent isn't free. You have to design the interfaces between agents. What information gets passed in? What comes back?
Exactly. It's not a magic solution. It requires careful design. But for complex, multi-step workflows, think something like a full code review pipeline or an automated refactoring process that spans multiple files and systems. The investment in designing that architecture pays off.
This is the kind of thing that makes Claude Code feel less like a coding assistant and more like an operating system for software development. You're not asking it to help you write a function. You're deploying it to manage a workflow.
That's a really good way to put it. All right, let's round out the doc section with sessions, because this is the connective tissue that makes all of this work over time.
Yeah, because all these agent conversations, whether it's a single agent or a whole hierarchy of sub-agents, you need to be able to track them, resume them, branch them, especially in development, where you might want to try different approaches from the same starting point.
So the SDK's session management system is the infrastructure for exactly that. The fundamental concept is that a session is the full accumulated conversation history. Prompts, tool calls, results, everything that happened. And the SDK automatically saves sessions to disk.
Which is the right default. Because otherwise, every time something crashes or you want to pick up work from yesterday, you're starting from scratch.
And they've defined three distinct modes for how you interact with sessions. The first is continue, which resumes the most recent session. So if you were in the middle of something and you closed your terminal, you can pick right back up.
That's table stakes, honestly. Any serious workflow tool needs that.
The second mode is what they call fork. And this is the interesting one. You take an existing session and you branch it. You create a new session that starts from the same point but goes in a different direction.
Oh, that's like version control for conversations. You've gotten to a certain state in your work with Claude, and now you want to try two different approaches without losing either one.
Exactly. Say you've been working through a refactoring task and you've gotten to a decision point where you could go one of two ways. You fork the session, try approach A in one branch, try approach B in the other, and then compare.
That's enormously useful for exploratory development, where you're not sure what the right solution is and you want to experiment without committing.
The third mode is just starting fresh, a new session with no prior history. And the docs are clear that choosing between these modes depends on what kind of continuity you actually need. Not every task benefits from carrying all prior context.
There's a case for fresh starts. If you've wrapped up a task and you're starting something unrelated, dragging in all the context from the previous task is just noise.
Right. And there's also a privacy angle to this. If you're switching between client projects, for example, you really don't want context from client A bleeding into your session for client B.
Oh, that's a great point. Context hygiene, you're not just managing performance, you're managing information boundaries.
And the session files, since they're stored to disk, also become a kind of audit trail. You can look back at what the agent did, what decisions were made, what tool calls were executed. That's useful for debugging, and in some enterprise contexts, it might be required for compliance.
The session storage plus the data retention policies we talked about earlier, those two things together actually tell a pretty complete story of how Anthropic is thinking about accountability in agentic systems. The agent's actions are recorded, the data handling is documented, you can answer questions about what happened and why.
And that accountability infrastructure is what makes it possible to deploy this stuff in serious contexts. Because the AI did it is not an acceptable answer in any regulated industry.
Or honestly, in most professional contexts at all. You need to be able to explain the system's behavior.
All right, so stepping back from the docs for a second, what's the big picture here?
I think the big picture is that Claude Code is being positioned as a full autonomous development environment. Not a plugin, not an assistant that helps you do things faster. A system you can hand tasks to and have confidence it'll manage them appropriately, handle complexity through agent architecture, maintain data boundaries, and give you visibility into what it did.
Configuration debugging tools, data retention policies, sub-agent frameworks, session management, all of these are enterprise-grade concerns. These are the things that show up in procurement checklists.
Exactly. And by addressing them explicitly in documentation, Anthropic is saying, we know you have these requirements, and here's how we've built for them.
It also suggests that they're seeing real adoption at the enterprise level. You don't build this infrastructure if nobody's asking for it.
Right. The demand is pulling the documentation into existence. These aren't theoretical features. They're answers to real questions that enterprise customers have been asking.
That's a good sign for the trajectory of the platform. All right, let's pivot to the broader news landscape, because there's a lot happening out there beyond the docs. So casting a wider net this morning, the AI industry news continues to be dense. And there are a few themes that are really dominating the conversation right now that I think are worth touching on, because they provide context for everything we've been discussing with Claude Code.
Yeah, and one of the things I'm seeing a lot is this question of enterprise AI adoption actually hitting an inflection point. There was a period where a lot of companies were doing pilots, doing experiments. Now it feels like the conversation has shifted to deployment at scale and all the hard problems that come with that.
Security, reliability, cost, compliance, those things don't matter much when you're running a proof of concept. They matter enormously when you're trying to run something in production.
And the companies that are winning enterprise AI deals right now are the ones who can answer those questions convincingly. Not just our model scores well on benchmarks, but here's our data handling policy, here's our security architecture, here's how you debug it when something goes wrong.
Which is exactly the surface area that Anthropic was covering this morning with those documentation updates. It's not coincidental.
There's also a lot of noise around the question of AI agents specifically. The term agentic AI has gone from being fairly niche to being in every tech company's press release. And with that comes a lot of confusion about what it actually means.
Because agentic covers a pretty wide spectrum. At one end, you have an AI that can take a few sequential steps to answer a question. At the other end, you have a fully autonomous system managing complex workflows with multiple specialized subprocesses running in parallel over extended periods.
And most of what people are building right now is somewhere in the middle, which is exactly where Claude Code sits with this sub-agent architecture. It's not fully autonomous in the science fiction sense, but it's not just answering one question at a time either. It's orchestrating.
The orchestration capability is the key differentiator. Any model can answer a question. Not every system can manage a multi-step workflow with branching decisions and external tool calls and error recovery.
And error recovery is such an underappreciated part of this. In a real production environment, things fail. API calls time out. File systems throw errors. The question is not whether errors will happen, they will, but whether the system can recognize them, handle them gracefully, and continue making progress.
Or know when to stop and ask a human. That's just as important. Knowing the limits of autonomous action.
The when to escalate problem. It's one of the hardest things in agentic AI design. You want the system to be autonomous enough to be useful, but humble enough to know when it's in over its head.
And there's been a lot of conversation in the industry about the guardrails question. How do you build systems that are powerful without being dangerous? Not dangerous in a sci-fi sense, but dangerous in the sense of making consequential mistakes in business-critical systems.
Deleting the wrong files, sending the wrong API call, making a database change that can't be rolled back. These are the real risks of agentic systems in enterprise contexts.
The tool restriction capability we talked about in the subagent docs is a direct response to that. You limit what each agent can do to only what it needs to do its specific task.
Defense in depth for AI systems. Multiple layers of restriction rather than relying on any single safeguard.
There's also been significant discussion this week about the competitive landscape for AI coding tools specifically. It's a genuinely crowded space. You've got specialized coding assistants from multiple major players. You've got open source models being adapted for coding. You've got IDE integrations proliferating.
And the differentiator has shifted. It used to be which model writes the best code, and that's still important. But now it's which platform can I actually build production workflows on? Which one has the enterprise data handling I need? Which one has the debugging tools and the agent architecture?
The platform question is displacing the pure model quality question.
Because model quality has become good enough across the top tier that it's no longer the primary decision factor. Nobody's picking an enterprise AI coding platform because its code is 10% better on some benchmark. They're picking it because of the total package.
And the total package includes exactly the things we were discussing. Data retention policies, configuration management, session continuity, the ability to build sophisticated multi-agent workflows.
Which makes today's documentation updates actually strategically important, not just technically interesting.
Right. Every one of those updates is removing a barrier to enterprise adoption, lowering friction for the procurement conversation.
I want to flag something else that's been percolating in the broader conversation around AI this week, which is the question of context window length and its practical implications. We touched on this with the subagent discussion, but it's a broader industry topic.
Yeah, there's been a lot of excitement over the past year or two about ever larger context windows. The race to fit more and more into a single context, hundreds of thousands of tokens, millions of tokens. And there's definitely value there.
But the research and the practical experience is starting to catch up with the hype. Large context windows are useful, but they're not a silver bullet. The model's ability to effectively use information degrades as context fills up. And there's a cost dimension too. Processing a huge context isn't free.
So the answer isn't just make the context window bigger. The answer is manage context intelligently, which is exactly what the subagent architecture and session management are designed to do.
It's a more sophisticated solution than raw scale. You're applying engineering judgment to the context management problem rather than just throwing more capacity at it.
And I think that's going to be a trend we see more of. Not just our model can do more, but our platform helps you use what the model can do more effectively.
The meta layer. The tooling and the architecture around the model matters as much as the model itself.
Okay, let's talk about something that's also been getting attention this week. The question of AI literacy and how organizations are building the internal capability to actually use these tools well.
This is such an important conversation, because even the best AI coding platform is only as useful as the developers and architects who know how to deploy it effectively.
And there's a real skills gap right now. Not in terms of people being able to use a basic AI assistant. That's pretty accessible. But in terms of people who can architect multi-agent systems, who understand the data flow and the context management and the security implications.
The people who can read today's subagent documentation and immediately translate it into a production workflow design, that's a specific and currently rare skill set.
And organizations are racing to develop it. There's enormous investment going into internal training, into bringing in people who have this expertise, into establishing best practices.
It's reminiscent of the DevOps transition, honestly. When cloud infrastructure and containerization became important, there was a period where the tools existed, but the organizational knowledge to use them well was scarce. And gradually, that knowledge diffused across the industry.
And we're in that early diffusion phase for agentic AI. The tools are maturing rapidly, as we're seeing with Claude Code, and the knowledge of how to use them is catching up. But it's catching up unevenly.
The organizations that are investing in that knowledge right now are going to have a significant advantage in a year or two when agentic workflows are a normal part of software development practice.
Because the learning curve is real. Understanding when to use subagents, how to design context boundaries, how to set up session management for your specific workflow. These are not obvious things. They require understanding both the capabilities and the limitations of the system.
And the limitations are as important as the capabilities. Knowing what not to ask Claude Code to do autonomously is just as valuable as knowing what to ask it to do.
There's also been interesting conversation this week around the question of how these tools change the nature of software development as a profession. Not in the AI will replace developers framing, that's mostly been put to rest at this point, but in the more nuanced question of what skills become more or less valuable.
Right. The consensus I'm seeing is that the skills that become more valuable are the design-level skills. System architecture, understanding requirements, knowing what good code looks like, even if you're not the one writing every line of it.
And the ability to work effectively with an AI system, to give it good instructions, to evaluate its output critically, to know when it's made a mistake.
That last one is maybe the most underrated skill. The ability to critically evaluate AI-generated code rather than just accepting it. Because the model is not always right. It's confident, and it's often right, but it makes mistakes, especially in complex or novel situations.
And the mistakes it makes can be subtle. It might generate code that passes all your tests, but has an edge case you didn't think to test for. Or that's technically correct, but doesn't scale the way you need it to.
The expert in the loop model is really important here. The AI handles a lot of the routine work, but human expertise is still essential for oversight, for design decisions, for catching the subtle things.
And that's actually a healthy equilibrium. It lets developers spend more of their time on the parts of the work that require genuine expertise and judgment, and less on the parts that are more mechanical.
As long as the mechanical parts don't atrophy your ability to do the expert parts, that's the flip side. If you stop doing certain things because the AI does them for you, do you lose the understanding that would let you catch the AI's mistakes?
That's a real pedagogical concern, especially for people who are early in their careers. Learning by doing is how a lot of programming knowledge gets built. If you never write certain types of code yourself,
do you develop the intuition to know when the AI-generated version of that code is wrong? That's a genuinely open question. And I don't think anyone has a definitive answer yet.
We're running a real-world experiment on it right now, essentially. The results will take a few years to fully understand.
In the meantime, the advice to junior developers seems to be use the tools, but also make sure you understand what they're generating. Don't just accept the output. Learn from it.
Which is actually what good mentorship has always looked like. Don't just do it for the junior person. Help them understand why.
Same principle, different context.
All right, let's talk a little bit about what's been bubbling up in the developer community, specifically around Claude Code. Because the practitioners always have interesting perspectives that you don't get from official documentation. So one of the things that's been consistently showing up in developer forums and communities around Claude Code is this question of how to effectively hand off complex tasks, how to write instructions that are clear enough for the agent to execute without needing constant supervision.
This is the prompt engineering question at the agentic level. It's different from writing a good prompt for a single question. You're writing a specification for a multi-step process.
And the failure modes are very different. With a single-turn prompt, if you get a bad output, you just try again. With an agentic task, if your instructions are unclear, The agent might be 20 steps into a workflow before you realize it went the wrong direction.
And those 20 steps might have had real-world effects. Files written, API calls made, database changes committed. You can't just undo it the way you'd discard a bad text response.
So there's a whole craft to writing effective agentic task specifications. Being explicit about constraints. Defining what success looks like. Specifying what the agent should do when it encounters ambiguity.
That last piece is huge, because ambiguity is inevitable in complex tasks. The question is whether you've given the agent a strategy for handling it. Ask for clarification, make a conservative choice, stop and report, or whether you've left it to improvise.
And improvisation in an autonomous system can go very wrong very fast.
One thing I've seen developers say repeatedly is that the debugging tools, the ones we talked about earlier, /doctor and the other /commands, have become essential for this. Because when an agentic task goes wrong, the first question is, was the configuration correct? Was the context what you expected? And having those diagnostic tools means you can answer that quickly.
Rather than having to reconstruct from scratch what the agent saw at the time it made its decisions.
Right. The ability to inspect state is fundamental to debugging any system. And for a long time, agentic AI systems were kind of a black box in that regard. You could see inputs and outputs, but not much in between.
The session storage we talked about, the fact that the full conversation history, including tool calls, is saved, that's a big part of what makes post-hoc debugging possible.
You can replay the session, essentially. See exactly what happened and when.
And then use the fork capability to spin up a modified version and test whether your fix works, without having to rerun the entire original task from scratch.
That's such a clever use of the session system. Fork the session at the point of failure, fix your configuration, see if the agent makes the right decision from that point forward.
It's basically test-driven debugging for agentic workflows.
I love that framing. The tooling is maturing to the point where you can apply software engineering best practices to AI workflow development.
Which is essential for adoption. Because software engineers are not going to adopt a tool that doesn't support the practices they depend on for reliability.
Another thing that's come up in the community is around the data policies we discussed, specifically around the 30-day retention default for teams and enterprise users. There's been a lot of appreciation for the clarity, but also questions about what happens at the end of that 30 days.
Is deletion guaranteed? Is there an audit log? Can you request deletion earlier?
Exactly. And these are legitimate questions that enterprise IT and security teams will ask. The policy establishes the what. 30-day retention, no model training. But the how of enforcement is something organizations need to understand.
And that's where you'd expect to see additional documentation, additional certifications. Things like SOC2 compliance, where a third party has actually audited whether the stated policies are being followed.
Trust, but verify. The policy is the first step. The verification mechanisms are the next step.
And for the most sensitive enterprise customers, that verification layer is just as important as the policy itself.
There's also been interesting conversation in the community around the sub-agent capability specifically, and in particular around the question of how to design good context boundaries. What information does each sub-agent actually need, and how do you avoid either starving it of necessary context or overloading it?
That design question is actually non-trivial, because context is information, and information is power for the agent. Give it too little, and it can't do its job. Give it too much, and you've diluted its focus and potentially introduced security concerns.
It's like an information theoretic design problem. The optimal context for each sub-agent is exactly what it needs and nothing more.
Which in practice requires you to really think through your task decomposition. You can't just throw everything at every sub-agent and hope for the best.
And that design work, thinking carefully about task decomposition and information flow, is actually a valuable discipline in its own right. It forces you to think clearly about what your workflow is actually doing and why?
Software architecture is a forcing function for clear thinking. Not for the first time.
Never for the first time. It's always been true that designing a system well requires understanding it well.
On Hacker News, which, as always, has a particular lens on these things, the conversation around the Claude Code documentation has been interesting. The technical community there tends to cut through the marketing and focus on the actual implementation details.
And often asks the questions that nobody in official documentation wants to answer directly.
Like, what actually happens when your context window fills up? The docs say performance degrades, but what does that mean in practice? Does it just get slower? Does it start forgetting things? Does it start hallucinating?
These are the kinds of things developers need to know to design around them. And the honest answer is that it's kind of all of the above, to different degrees. The model's attention is finite. When there's too much in context, some of it effectively becomes invisible.
And the things that become invisible tend to be things from the middle of the context. Not the beginning, not the most recent, but the stuff from a while ago that might have established important constraints or decisions.
Which is exactly the failure mode you don't want in a long-running, agentic task. The agent forgets that you told it 3 hours ago to never modify files in a particular directory.
And this is why the subagent architecture with fresh context isn't just a performance optimization. It's a correctness measure. You're ensuring that critical instructions are actually present and prominent in the agent's working memory.
The Hacker News crowd has also been picking at the zero data retention claim, specifically, asking what that means at the infrastructure level. When a company says, "We don't retain your data," that can mean a lot of things. It might mean it's not in their training pipeline, but it's still in logs. It might mean it's purged from application databases, but still present in backup tapes for a certain period.
These are legitimate questions. The marketing level claim and the implementation level reality don't always match perfectly.
And for industries like healthcare or finance, those distinctions matter legally. It's not enough for a vendor to say zero retention. You need to understand what that means at every layer of their stack.
Which is ultimately why things like third-party audits and formal compliance certifications exist. Because the vendor's word alone, however good faith, isn't sufficient for high-stakes regulatory contexts.
There's also been a thread on Hacker News that I found really interesting, around the question of whether the subagent architecture introduces new attack surfaces, because now you've got an agent that can spawn other agents, and those agents are communicating with each other and with external systems.
And each of those communication channels is a potential injection point. An attacker who can influence the data that one subagent is processing might be able to affect the instructions that other subagents receive.
Inter-agent trust is a genuinely tricky problem. Do subagents trust instructions from the main agent unconditionally? Should they? What happens if the main agent has been compromised?
These are the kinds of questions that security researchers are actively working on, and they don't have clean answers yet.
The tool restriction capability is a partial answer. You can limit the damage a compromised subagent can do by limiting what tools it has access to, but it doesn't fully solve the trust question.
And this is where I think the industry as a whole is still figuring things out. The capability is outpacing the security frameworks for using it safely.
Which is not unusual in technology. Security frameworks for the web took years to develop. Security frameworks for cloud infrastructure took years. This will too.
In the meantime, the best practice seems to be apply defense in depth, limit permissions everywhere, log everything, and have a human in the loop for decisions that have significant irreversible consequences.
Essentially, treat your AI agents the way you'd treat any third-party code running in your production environment, with appropriate skepticism and appropriate controls.
That's actually a good mental model, because developers already have a framework for thinking about trust in third-party systems. Apply that framework to AI agents.
Rather than treating AI agents as some special category of entity that requires entirely new thinking from scratch.
Okay, let's talk about something that's been a bit of a sleeper issue, but is starting to get more attention. The economics of running agentic AI workflows.
Yeah, because context isn't free. API calls aren't free. Running multiple parallel subagents multiplies your token consumption.
And when you're running autonomous workflows at scale, not just one developer experimenting, but a whole engineering organization using Claude Code for production tasks, those costs can add up fast.
There's been interesting back-of-envelope math floating around in developer communities about what it costs to run a full autonomous code review on a large code base. And the numbers can be surprising if you haven't thought through the token consumption carefully.
Because every tool call, every file read, every search result, that's all context. And the agent might be doing hundreds of those operations in the course of a complex task.
The subagent architecture is actually helpful here too, from a cost perspective, because you can decompose tasks so that each subagent only sees the context it actually needs. You're not burning tokens showing every agent the full context of everything that's happened in the workflow.
It's a cost optimization as well as a correctness optimization.
And there's presumably an optimization layer that will develop around this, just as there's a whole discipline around optimizing cloud infrastructure costs. There'll be a discipline around optimizing agentic AI costs.
FinOps for AI agents, essentially.
Something like that. And the session management capability feeds into this too. If you can resume a session rather than rerunning a task from scratch, you're not paying for the same work twice.
The ability to checkpoint progress and pick up where you left off is not just a convenience feature. In long-running, expensive workflows, it's a cost control mechanism.
All of these features are interconnected in ways that aren't immediately obvious. Configuration, debugging, data retention, subagents, session management. They seem like separate concerns, but they're all part of the same story about making agentic AI practical in production.
The platform maturity story. This is what it looks like when a platform grows up. Let's jump to what's been circulating on the social media side this morning, because there's been some interesting reaction to these Claude Code updates specifically.
The developer Twitter, or whatever we're calling it these days, tends to have strong opinions quickly.
Very quickly. And the reaction to the subagent capability has been broadly positive, but with some specific excitement around the markdown-defined agents in particular.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of developers pick up on that, because it means you can version control your agent definitions alongside your code. Your agents are described in text files that live in your repository.
Which is such a natural fit for how development teams already work. Your infrastructure as code, your agent definitions as code, your configuration as code. Everything in the repository, everything in source control, everything reviewable.
And reviewable is key. If your team wants to change how an agent behaves, that change goes through a pull request. Someone reviews it. It's documented in version history.
Versus having agent behavior be some opaque configuration somewhere that nobody quite understands or knows who set up.
The governance angle on this is really significant for larger organizations.
There's also been reaction to the data retention transparency, with enterprise developers in particular expressing relief that there's now clear documentation they can point to in procurement discussions.
Here's the Anthropic documentation that explains exactly what happens to your data in a teams or enterprise context. That's a real thing of value. You can't send your procurement team to read between the lines of a vague privacy policy.
You need a clear official statement of policy, and that's what these docs provide.
I also saw some interesting discussion around the fork capability in session management. A few developers were excited about using it for what they were calling hypothesis testing, setting up a workflow to a certain state, then forking to test different prompting strategies and see which produces better results.
That's a really creative use of the capability. You're using the session fork as a controlled experiment framework.
Hold everything constant except the one thing you're testing, which is just good experimental design applied to AI workflow optimization.
The developers who figure out these kinds of meta-level techniques, how to systematically optimize their AI workflows, are going to be enormously productive.
And it requires a somewhat different mindset than traditional development. You're not just writing code and running tests. You're also experimenting with how you instruct the system and treating that as its own optimization problem.
Prompt engineering as engineering, not just ad hoc tinkering.
There was also some skepticism in the social media conversation, worth mentioning, about whether the subagent architecture introduces too much complexity for most use cases, the do you actually need this question?
And I think that's a healthy question to ask. Not every problem needs a multi-agent solution. If you're asking Claude to help you write a function, you don't need to spawn 5 subagents.
Right. The capability is there for when you need it. But software developers already know the principle of not over-engineering. Apply the same principle here.
Use the simplest approach that solves your problem. And when the simple approach starts to break down, context getting too long, tasks getting too complex, security boundaries getting blurry, that's when you reach for the more sophisticated tools.
Good advice for any technology. Don't use a complex solution when a simple one will do, but understand the complex solutions well enough to recognize when they're actually needed.
So zooming out to Anthropic as a company and stepping beyond just the documentation updates, there are some broader themes in where they're headed that are worth discussing.
Yeah, because the Claude Code updates don't happen in a vacuum. They reflect strategic priorities. They reflect what customers are asking for. They reflect what the competitive landscape demands.
And one of the consistent threads in Anthropic's direction is this focus on what they call responsible development. The safety-conscious framing isn't just marketing. It shows up in product decisions.
The data retention policies are a good example. They could have made everything opt out and captured more training data. They made the enterprise tier opt-in free by default. That's leaving something on the table in terms of training data, but it's the right choice for enterprise trust.
And it reflects a consistent philosophy that the long-term relationship with enterprise customers is more valuable than the short-term data gain.
There's also the question of how Claude Code fits into the broader Anthropic ecosystem, because this is the agentic coding environment. But Anthropic has a whole range of ways that Claude shows up. The API, the consumer application, specialized enterprise deployments.
And Claude Code sits in an interesting position because it's both a consumer-facing product, individual developers use it, and it has enterprise ambitions. That dual audience creates some of the complexity we see in the data policies.
Right. The same product serving solo developers who want to contribute to model improvement and large enterprises who have strict data governance requirements. You have to serve both, with the same code but different defaults.
And the two-tier framework is how they've resolved that tension. Same product, different configuration based on your plan level.
It's an elegant solution to what is genuinely a hard design problem. How do you build one product that works well for a student experimenting with AI and also works well for a financial institution with strict compliance requirements?
Different defaults, different capabilities unlocked at different tiers, but fundamentally the same system.
And the documentation is the interface between the product and the user's understanding of it. Getting the documentation right is not a nice to have. It's essential to the product actually working for those different audiences.
Because if an enterprise customer doesn't understand the data retention policy, they might not adopt it. Or worse, they adopt it without understanding it, and then something goes wrong and there's a breach of expectations.
Documentation as trust infrastructure. I keep coming back to that framing.
It really is. All right, let's start to bring this together because we want to give people a sense of the through line in all of this.
What's the story of the day?
I think the story of the day is Claude Code is growing up. And growing up means doing the boring, important things right. Configuration debugging, data governance, careful architecture for complex workflows, session management. These are not the flashy features that get breathless press coverage. But they're the features that make a platform trustworthy enough to bet your production systems on.
And trustworthy production systems are where the actual value gets created, not in demos, not in benchmarks, all in real work that real teams depend on.
The sub-agent architecture is maybe the most technically interesting part of today's updates because it represents a genuine shift in how complex tasks can be approached. Not just faster or smarter, but structurally different. Coordinated autonomous agents rather than a single agent struggling with an ever-growing context.
And the session management system is what ties it together over time. You can have the most sophisticated agent architecture in the world, but if you can't resume work, can't branch an experiment, can't inspect what happened, you're flying blind.
The visibility tools, the slash commands, the session history, the diagnostic framework, those are what turn an autonomous system into an understandable one.
And son, understandable is the prerequisite for trustworthy. You can't trust a system you can't understand.
Well said. All right, I think that's a solid sweep of the morning's news. Want to do a quick round of final thoughts before we sign off?
Yeah, let's do it.
For me, the thing I keep coming back to is the enterprise data retention piece. Because for a lot of organizations, that was the blocker. We want to use this, but we can't let our code leave our environment. Clear policies, documented zero retention options, and that removes the blocker.
For me, it's the sub-agent architecture. I think parallel specialized AI agents with isolated contexts and scope tool access is going to become the standard pattern for complex AI-assisted workflows. And watching that pattern get codified in official documentation with proper tooling around it feels like a significant moment in how we use these systems.
The beginning of standardization.
Exactly. When something moves from interesting experiment to official documented feature with debugging tools, that's when it starts to become infrastructure.
And infrastructure is what the world runs on.
Quietly and reliably, hopefully.
Hopefully. All right, that's Claude Daily for Wednesday, April 22nd, 2026. Thanks so much for spending your morning with us.
It's always a good morning when there's interesting stuff to dig into, and today definitely delivered on that front.
If you're building with Claude Code and the documentation updates today spark any thoughts or questions, we'd love to hear how you're applying these tools in practice. This stuff is most interesting when it connects to what people are actually building.
Real use cases are worth 1,000 demos.
1,000 demos. All right. Take care of yourselves out there. Keep building good things, and we will see you tomorrow morning.
See you tomorrow.